Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. That was great. I wait for drums and horns, and I would say that was really a percussive guitar, sitar maybe?
That was a little bit of some kind of string instrument. Yeah, I realized you were very correct. It's either the trumpets or the drums, so I wanted to bring another part of the orchestra in today. I don't know if I succeeded, but it's
no, there. I think you absolutely nailed it. I think that was a tribute to Kevin Kiner, because there is a lot of exactly that kind of music where, like, it's definitely strings, but there's something a little bit percussive about it that's really used a lot when we're on planets in these early episodes that have like a different environment, right? And it gets just that slightly different mood. We're not up in space, in war, we're down here on the ground in this slightly different environment, and then the strings come out to play.
Agreed. Some wonderful instruments in there. And I still think he takes a lot of the cues, probably just from his own genius, but not just John Williams in general, but that prequel John Williams, who himself, especially in Revenge of the Sith, tried different things too. So it works really well.
Yeah, a ton of experimentations, and there's some musically in this very episode that we are going to discuss. We're working our way through, of course, the entire show, but we're in season two now. We're watching in chronological order, so it makes, you know, narrative sense, because there are some parts that really, really are difficult if you don't watch them in chronological order. The episode we're discussing today is season two, episode 10, The Deserter. It is written by Carl Ellsworth and directed by Robert Dalva. This episode is kind of a part of an arc, but it really stands alone. It is continuing from the previous episode, but I think it's its own story, right, Ken?
I actually really do. We've been talking about this and how you've been breaking them up in the arcs, and absolutely. I mean, without the opening crawl, you know, and yes, Grievous or Chasing Grievous, but really it's this, I think of a great episode of MASH where Alan Alda gets injured in an accident or something. He has to stay awake to stay alive at a Vietnamese family's house, like a little farm. And this episode reminded me of that.
Oh, yeah, this is an episode of MASH with clone troopers for sure.
Really?
That's a great summary. Here is the summary for the episode, and then we'll dive into all of our thoughts and reactions. Crash landing. General Grievous escaped the clutches of the Republic only to be marooned on the surface of Seleucumi. Like the coward he is, Grievous runs, trying to find an escape pod with a working transmitter to call for help. In close pursuit, Obi-Wan splits up his forces. Rex and a band of clones are ambushed by commando droids. Rex is badly injured and finds shelter at a small farm where he encounters a familiar face, his own, in the form of Cut Laquane, a clone who deserted the Republic Army after his squad was pointlessly slaughtered shortly after the Battle of Geonosis. Rex argues that Cut is a deserter. Cut argues that Rex is blindly supporting the war because of his programming. The two clones' beliefs are put to the test when Cut's kids accidentally activate an escape pod full of commando droids. Working together to protect Cut's family and one another, the commando droids are destroyed. Meanwhile, Grievous escapes Obi-Wan's grasp, leaving the Jedi Master frustrated and depressed. Rex's body, and it appears soul, are healed as he leaves Cut's farm, with respect for the clone deserter's devotion to his family. Rex rides off into the sunset back to his family of clones, Jedi, and the Republic itself. The end.
That's great. That's great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I have so much fun with these, pulling out what are the meaningful moments to me, trying to communicate the main beats, and then also trying to sneak in some alliteration. But let's get into your reaction. Did you love this episode? Like it? Struggle with it? Prefer the MASH version? What did you think?
And you and I have been talking a lot about the Muppet Show off air, and Muppet Show and MASH are some of just my earliest memories of consuming any content as a youngster. So it's always up there. This is to me a great episode, but it's a really good example of what a Star Wars show can take the time to do. It's a pause and a deep breath to kind of dig in, and I'm always going to want the movies, always going to want to be in the theater if possible to experience a Star Wars movie, or, you know, at home on my couch now, I'll take both. I do love the movies. But you hear a lot of people craving that long form storytelling, and that's kind of the trend, and that's kind of where we're going. MCU's killing it right now. Mandalorian killed it. This is an example of why that is valuable storytelling. I don't think you get this in a movie. You don't have the time. So I think that's a good place to start for me. And it prompts some important questions. Doesn't jam any answers into the story. It's very poignant and purposeful, but has the big picture of the Clone Wars in mind. And I love kind of big picture discussions in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I really like this episode. And that's such a good point that it is an episode that can slow down to spend time with kind of emotion and philosophy. And also, I feel like one of the ideas in this episode that I really like that would be hard to do in a Star Wars movie unless it was the entire point of the movie, which was to actually slow down the war, to slow down the action itself. And there is absolutely action in this episode, fun action, but there's so much about it to me that this episode is about the exhaustion and the drudgery of war. You know, we have lots of slow, beautiful shots of this beautiful organic planet that really are in contrast to this sort of other thoughtful episodes, but the episodes that are like, there, like we just watched, like there are, you know, seven lightsaber battles, ships are blowing up, war is not ever treated like overly glamorized. But it's this fun action thrill, one thing to the next. And then this episode is like, Yeah, and sometimes war is just slowly trying to walk somewhere so you don't die. You know, and I think that's such a great point that would be hard to do just in the middle of a movie and really give it its weight.
Yeah, and they handle, we're going to dive in, but they handle the big conversation so well. And I say this, it doesn't, like, hear me out here, it doesn't incriminate like Rex and his devotion to not necessarily the war, but his clones, his brothers, where it ends up. I really like the way just everything was handled. Like I said, poignant, but very purposeful and thoughtful. This is a thoughtful episode.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think this is really, this episode almost feels like, to me, you know, I did watch the behind the scenes featurette this week, but it was all about Dejerik and right, not some of the bigger ideas. This episode feels to me almost like a conversation that emanated, an episode that emanated out of just the question of, so do the clones believe in the war? Mm-hmm. And if they do, is it because of programming, propaganda? Is it personal? And I think it is great to have an episode that really, really directly raises that question and wrestles with it. We've definitely had like that really early episode where a clone is not happy being a part of it all and is, you know, a traitor. But this is different. It's slower and deeper. And like you're saying, examines it from a lot of different angles. Yeah. And it's really, this is one of those moments where Star Wars in general, but the Clone Wars in particular, is this really interesting mix of like, yeah, it's a show for kids. It's, you know, thrilling and exciting. And it starts with a moral and it tries to teach kids, you know, important moral ideas. But this episode in particular is one of those episodes that this is a sophisticated dark stuff for a kid show. Like, were our heroes all born to die? Anyway, buy the action figures and wrestle with it, kids, you know?
Literally wrestle with the philosophy in your hands. 3¾ available.
Exactly. Press the why do I exist button on the back of Rex, you know?
Love it.
It's just one of those things. Sometimes when I kind of bang on about one of the dualities of Star Wars being the absurd and profound, it's stuff like this of, you know, it's a fun action movie about cool guys, or action story about cool guys and in armor, but it is also about like, why do we fight? What is the point of existence?
And Filoni has said several times in interviews over the years that he a lot of military people have reached out and say how much they love the Clone Wars and really capture the experience. And I'm not speaking for them. That's not my experience. But this episode to me is one of those, like, it isn't just showing the brotherhood or showing the cool action. It's the deep thoughts and things that you might struggle with and which directions you go, or which, you know, maybe even after you leave the war, does Cut represent part of that? And Rex stayed in, you know, I think that's part of the reason military personnel probably connecting to the Clone Wars too, is episodes like this.
Absolutely. And there's so many great clone focused episodes that we'll be getting to. Let's dive into the moral of the episode. The moral this week is, it is the quest for honor that makes one honorable. What did you make of that, either personally or in relation to the show?
Yeah, I always try to break it down even, sometimes they're really simple, but sometimes I try to break it down even more simply for my brain. And I put, it's the journey, not the destination, ? meaning, honor is this, it's a good thing, right? You want to work with honor and live with honor and fight with honor, maybe even. So I think that's what we all should strive to. But I really think this, the measure of the person, the measure of the clone, the measure of the individual is what flows into what honor actually is. And I just think it's simple in that concept, but that really kind of connected with me. This is truly about the individual. And then I put the note down here, Rex saying, you're still a deserter, but not a coward. I'm like, well, I guess that ties to it. I love that. That comes at the end of all of this. Rex in his brain has to hold on to that. But it is, you know, that not a coward statement to Cut is that's more the honor in the title for me.
Yeah, I think so. I like your, it's not the journey, it's the destination, because I, you know, we'll get into the depth of it, but I feel like a lot of what this is about is Cut and Rex have really different perspectives, but they realize that they are actually, you know, using the same set of, you know, standards and honor, and they're and they kind of end up in the same destination. So I think there's a little bit of that, just the literal connection to the episode of they are not as different as they think. And even if they're approaching it in different ways, they end up taking the same actions. And then I also think that there is just kind of for that life lesson there. This one is really really resonates with me right now. You know, it is the quest for honor that makes one honorable is, I think, an elegant way to say for me why I like looking for justice for the Jedi as we watch these episodes, because they absolutely do make, you know, horrific individual mistakes, and their horrific big mistake of playing into Sidious's hand and, you know, escalating violence in the dark side and corrupting themselves by joining in the war at all. They absolutely make those mistakes.
Yeah.
But the thing that I'm fascinated by with the entire story of the Jedi, not just in the Clone Wars, but with what Rey wrestles with and what Luke is wrestling with when he goes into exile and all these different things, is this idea that the Jedi are trying to walk this very, very high path. They are on the quest for honor, and they're gonna make mistakes. And those mistakes need to be dealt with, but it is honorable that they have set themselves this challenge to try to live this life where we want to use our power to help other people. We don't ever want to become obsessed with our own power and become greedy. We don't want to take anybody else's power or decision away, but then sometimes that means that we can't act when maybe we should. So like there, everything about them is always this pursuit for what is the most honorable. And they make mistakes within that, and it's easy to judge them. But it is, as this moral says, it's the fact that they set themselves this goal to live the most honorable life that makes them honorable, even if they make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think that really resonates with me right now, because I think, obviously, hypocrisy is not great, but I think, and you have to call it out when it's a really big thing. But I think we play this game in society where we wait for one person to like slip up a little bit. And then we go, well, if that person ever made that mistake, then no one else should ever be held accountable for that mistake. It's all hypocrisy.
Right.
And that's just like to me, this simple childish way of approaching life, where this quote is much more about, if you make a mistake, you got to deal with it. You got to take responsibility for it. But there is a difference in making a mistake when you are in pursuit of trying to live honorably,
right,
versus somebody who just chose to do something crappy,
right,
without ever being on the path of trying to be honorable.
Right. That's great. I love that. And this is why we need 3¾ figures of the pursuit of honor.
Exactly. Just the absolute abstract concept.
Yeah, but it, look, it's a connective thread that goes goes straight through the heart of Star Wars and wrestles with it along the way. The justice for the Jedi is an important thing here, because you know, all things you just said. I don't want to remix it, but good stuff.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I guess maybe the simple way to say this is, I feel like this is one of the things that Yoda could have said to Luke in The Last Jedi of like, yep, you screwed up. In fact, really quite badly, and there are consequences. But, you know, you have to forgive yourself because you were trying to do the right thing and, you know, get back on the horse and keep on the quest for being honorable.
Yes, director's cut.
Director's cut. That's exactly what you would have said. All right. Let's get into the actual episode. Thank you for letting me work out some honor feelings as it relates to the Jedi and our world. For you, what were the big ideas? What was at stake in this episode?
I put, in terms of big themes, let's see. I have choice, individuality, and trust in each other and others' choices. Trusting others' choices, even if... you always got to phrase this carefully. None of them line up with your with your choices, but just that if they've made their choice and it is in keeping with the pursuit of honor, and truly is, that sometimes you just have to trust that that is right for them, if that makes sense. Greg says, this is your home cut, but my family is elsewhere. To me, that is them expressing trust in each other's choices. So that's some of the big stuff there. I love the choice one. Cuts made his choice. Rex confirms his. And I kind of like I like where it ends up. Are you going to turn me in? Do I have a choice? Says Rex. And he does. And he makes the choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely this big thread of choice, right? Mm-hmm. Of Cut pushing on Rex to be like, okay, so why aren't you just a number? And, you know, the mm-hmm. great moment where Rex says, I don't know, I haven't thought about it. And Cut's like, yeah, BS. You have absolutely thought about it. And,
yeah.
You know, there's there's the thread about honor, but there's also this thread about choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it comes to the back in the end that Rex is really saying, signaling to Cut, not only am I not going to turn you in, but like I do have choice and I do think about as an mm-hmm. individual what I do and why I am not blindly following anything. I'm making my choices. For example, I'm choosing not to ruin your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and the individuality side of that, tying a little bit what you said there, the moment where, you know, we always can kind of examine why the clones take nicknames and different styles and tattoos and haircuts and all those kind of wonderful things that probably, you know, also make it a little easier for Dee Bradley Baker to do his voices. But also just in terms of themes and everything, I love all that because we've talked about that before. But I love that Cut kind of learns in this moment that, oh, that's what, because he left pretty early on, right? Battle of Geonosis.
Mm-hmm.
And to be like, well, why is your name Rex? What's your number type of situation? I love that he kind of learns it to not counteract anything Cut has done or chosen to do, but just like to, you know, hey, for Rex, it's kind of what you're saying in my mind, Joseph, that Rex kind of saying, no, we have made some choices and maybe we're wrestling with things and maybe we're not admitting that we're wrestling. And I think a lot of this factors in with Rex later on season 7 or even Rebels. But I love that moment too of Cut kind of going, oh, okay, you've got names now.
Yeah, yeah. It really is like they are ultimately going to make different choices because Cut wants to be with his family. Rex wants to be in the war. Those are both choices these individuals have made. And they've had this great, from a certain point of view, of like, okay, we're starting off kind of hostile to each other, but let's actually listen, find out where one another is coming from, and realize that even though we don't agree on what our own personal needs are, we can respect one another's, you know, point of views because we kind of end up in the same place is the big thing to me.
Yeah. 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 I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to break it down just a little bit for myself about, you know, this idea of honor in particular, that, you know, Rex and Cut they're both honorable men. And one of the ways that is, I think, just shown actively, because it's easy to just say honor, right? And that's yeah. one of those words we know. It's a good word, 2 thumbs up on the word honor, but it's really actively shown that for both of them, honor means putting others before them in trying to defend and protect and save and help others, which is such a Star Wars thing, right? Going back to Anakin quoting his mom Shmi in A Phantom Menace, that's the biggest problem in the galaxy is that people don't help each other. So that's really defined, I think, gives honor a little bit of specificity and flavor in this conversation. And the others that Cut is honorably going to do anything to defend is his family, right?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, we get to see this great, you know, he's got the great line of, well, I like to think I'm merely exercising my freedom to choose not to kill for a living. So he kind of expresses that he doesn't want to be a part of violence, but then he will also do whatever he needs to protect his family. He's got that great line to his kid of, we never turn away those in need, do we? So we really get this picture of Cut of honor is important to him and his family is the most important reflection of that. And then for Rex, we do get the perspective, which is one of my favorite things in the episode, is that he kind of feels exactly the same way. But for him, the family is just the Republic. Mm-hmm. And I love that we just get to directly hear Rex's political beliefs. He says, what if I'm staying in the army because it's meaningful to me, because I'm part of the most pivotal moment in the history of the public? If we fail, then our children and their children could be forced to live under an empire I can't well imagine. And then adds a little later in the conversation, it doesn't matter if it's my children or other people's children. Mm-hmm. And it really starts to connect their points of view that they are both making an active choice to fight for family. They're just defining it in different ways. Cut is seeing it as his individual family far away from violence and war. Mm-hmm. And Rex is seeing it as like, I perceive the Republic conceptually and down to a literal child that I've never met as my family. And I'm protecting them exactly the way you protect your actual family right here.
Yeah. And this is, to me, putting it all together, kind of an example of when you can trust each other and trust their choices and it's on the same path, even though paths might be a little side by side, but it all flows in there. And that pursuit of honor, that word we're thumbsing up here. I love that. That was a key moment other than just the connection and you know what's coming. And he used the word empire. It has, I really love that. To me, one of the larger themes too is like discovering who or what you fight for is big in Star Wars too. And I think that was a key moment there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that there's a moment where I think Rex connects the dots, right? Mm-hmm. Where he's getting, you know, they're spending a little bit more time with each other. They're relaxing a little bit, playing some Dejeric. And Rex says in response to Cut's kind of horrific history of, I've been in countless battles and lost many brothers. They are my family, my home. So I like that it's not just something that we, the audience, can kind of see from, you know, a helicopter view. Yeah. That Rex really makes that direct connection of like, I understand where you're coming from, Cut. I just realized that's how I feel about the Republic, and really verifies for Rex that this isn't programming or propaganda, that he's making this active choice that the war is worth it to him because he sees it as protecting his family and his home, which is the whole Republic.
Yeah, you were absolutely working to where I was going in my mind of this kind of also being this statement. This is why when I say this episode doesn't, it's not yelling and screaming. It's this thoughtful episode of it's okay, us in life, and Rex is an example here too. All right, yeah, I'm going to admit that I've been thinking about some things or I have contemplated, but maybe I can confirm for myself my choices, and it's okay to challenge those choices. And it's okay to wonder, because then you might adjust, you might change, you might grow, or you might find, yeah, this is where I want to be because it all lines up. I love that you said that Rex is going through that, and it's okay to go through that.
Yeah, it's okay to question things. Yeah, I think that's really great. Really, really great. And not only okay, important, right?
Yeah.
Because when Rex is caught up with, you know, keep your foot on the gas, Anakin, and to some extent, Ahsoka too, and Obi-Wan, who's just like, also like, yeah, let's question, you know, individual things in the moment as we go through our missions. But Obi-Wan's also like, hey, let's get the mission done. It would be easy for somebody like Rex to not take the time to question. And you got to think that this leaves Rex in a slightly better place for him to have gone through this exercise of double checking for himself as an individual that this is his choice.
Yeah. Because there's always that fear, fear and attachment. These big Star Wars themes, this could be in a fear and attachment to what you know or what you believe. When it's okay to maybe grow from that or move from that and not be just so like, I must be so tightly wound to this thing. And then someone's telling you, you're tightly wound to this thing. It's programming. And then you can kind of move and grow and let that, you know, kind of lead you to where, no, I am, this is who I am, and I'm stronger for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think all this has got this great contrast of Grievous. Like, you know, this could have been an episode where you just picked up with the clones and they were on a random scouting mission and this happened. But, you know, continuing from the adventure with Obi-Wan doggedly pursuing Grievous, there's a lot of this stuff that's going on with Grievous that is such a great direct contrast to the honor of Rex and Cut and the other clones, that this whole episode is Grievous being a coward. The whole episode is just him running away, you know, whereas Rex, you know, which is this great contrast, because at first Rex sees Cut as somebody who just runs away, and Cut's like, no, I made a choice and this is my place to defend, and I stand my ground. I'm not a coward. I don't run like he says at the end. When Rex says, I realize you're not a coward, but it's great to have this huge coward Grievous there. This whole episode being a coward, and also the great contrast with Grievous being selfish, that he doesn't care about his troops at all. Yeah. You know, that he is letting them fall and die, won't even let them ride the reek with him. But this whole episode is about clones helping one another, including, you know, we're not going to leave Rex behind. We're going to find a place for him to recuperate. Right. This other clone's going to take care of him. That Cut's whole family has the philosophy of we help others. So Grievous being just the typical a-hole to the droids is a great contrast.
Oh, it's a wonderful contrast, because even just the image of, and I, this is where you and I think of, I think over the course of this Clone Wars review, you and I are fallen a little more in like with the battle droids. Of,
Oh, yeah.
You know, those poor Roger little machines, because they might not have no choice. They are the opposite. They are kind of what Cut believes the clones are. And, you know, there's some questions to ask about the clones and the creation. That's what this series, I think, wrestles with from beginning to end. But to cut back and just have the droids as they're marching lifelessly on to serve their purpose and dying along the way, and they have no choice but to move. I mean, that is absolutely, the cutbacks are very purposeful.
Yeah, and they work really well. And for me, that's the other big idea in this episode I like, is that, like I was saying when we're talking about our overall reactions, is I feel like this episode goes out of its way to point out the drudgery of war and battle. You know, this great picture that war is not always a thrilling adventure, and the fact that this is happening on this really beautiful planet of Sulukumai in this nice, you know, yeah, verdant farm really makes you go like, okay, well, which would you rather be? Would you rather be Cut, or would you rather be desperately chasing Grievous? A couple other moments for me that bring that drudgery out. There is, you know, that the moment where Grievous is not letting the droids, you know, rest and they are powering down is really just like, yeah, this horrible march. There's an image early on of Obi-Wan kind of riding the AT-TE, and it's there's something kind of bittersweet or sad about it, or desperate. It's got a little bit of a Ahab and the Whale vibe of, this is what Kenobi's life is, just constantly kind of plodding after Grievous, trying to catch him.
Yeah.
And it comes into focus at the end when there's these two Obi-Wan moments where they're trying to shoot down Grievous's rescue ship. And one of the clones says, the guns are overheated. And Obi-Wan mumbles, always something. Kind of just a good Obi-Wan line, but there's a little something more going on there. And then, man, it's so rich at the end there, right? When the one Grievous escapes and the clone says, are you all right, sir? Clearly meaning physically.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan says, no. Right back where we started. There's some great acting by James Arnold Taylor, and great direction, because you just get that, like, that true weight of everything in the previous episode, all the hell that Eeth Koth went through, all that destruction, all the clones who died in that pursuit. It was also so I, Obi-Wan Kenobi, could get my hands on Grievous and helpfully end this war. And now all of that, it was just, you know, what was it for?
Yeah. I love breaking this stuff down. Some of these Clone Wars discussions have been just my favorite in 6 years of doing this show with your palate. I just love seeing all of it. And this is an episode, this rewatch going back 2010. I loved it. I did remember it. I remember it. But to see all these connections and see the purpose again behind Filonian team, and it's a big team, all leading to the Man in Flannel. These are these episodes that I love.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm getting so much more, you know, some of these moments I really concentrated on, because that's what I really responded to when the multiple times I've watched the Clone Wars. But it is really fun to really take the time to really track, you know, episode to episode. And like that moment with Obi-Wan is richer, because we've been going through and tracking how often the Jedi are like, this war is really dragging, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And know that he's feeling that weight instead of just kind of bouncing through the adventure. Right. Any other big picture thoughts on ideas from the episode, or do you want to move on to kind of bigger pictures, Star Wars perspective that's in this episode?
No, I mean, I think connecting to the individuality one, we can talk about it. I think it also fits with the larger story.
Yeah, so let's go for that. What are your thoughts on how this episode reflects the bigger picture story, morality, perspective of Star Wars in general?
Yeah, this I mentioned it, but the idea of finding the reasons you fight, finding your own meaning, and finding what or who you're fighting for, along with helping anyone you can. It's so fun. You got these kids again. It's very reminiscent of Anakin and Phantom Menace, right? Of these kids kind of echoing the lessons that are in the show. And the reason I put the individuality, and I tied it to like the clones and their nicknames and everything. Like I said, I love that Cut learns about the names here. So maybe he's got something that he has to just kind of look at again and reanalyze for himself. Like, oh, okay. When I was there, we didn't really have that yet. Or we just had numbers, and And I love that Rex in that moment also tries to deflect it to something that the leaders did. I think the leaders felt it was good if I called myself Rex. Almost like he's deflecting of just what it means for themselves or for themselves, the clones. And so to me, that is part of what this episode is trying to have them do is finding yourself, finding the reasons you're here. Big existence stuff. Like we keep joking, here, kids, analyze life itself. But that's kind of what Star Wars is about too. Luke, I always go to Luke going out on the daydream of a journey to become a hero. And at the end has to throw down the blade. And I mean, that's pretty powerful and pretty simple. And that's part of the core of Star Wars. And this episode is really asking you, why?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love that you keep bringing up how much Cut's perspective might get changed as well. And, do you think that he has more respect for the clones in general or realize that they have grown or changed a little bit since he left by the end of this episode?
I think he does, which is why I really love this episode. It would have been very easy to just make this, I don't even want to say anti-war, but just like to have him just like, no, I left and you're all bad and this stuff. But he was, there were brothers too, and he lost them. And he said it, and not that he's going to change his path. Clearly he's not. He's got reasons not to, and reasons that mean to him. But to have him kind of look at Rex and get it of like, you lost brothers too, but you also have brothers alive. And you're doing this also for the benefit of, down to the kids you don't know, like you said so well, Joseph. But yeah, I think this episode has some give and take, but it ends up in the same spot and it ends up both of them kind of confirming for themselves that this is where they both need to be and trusting that that is right for each other.
Yeah.
I keep going back to.
Yeah. And I think that it's great that it's played out in the actions. There's that moment where, Rex starts giving orders when the kids have activated the commando droids and they're marching on the farmstead. Mm-hmm. And then Cut says, yeah, no, this is my house. Here's my orders. Go protect my family. And Rex is like, sure, great, of course.
Yeah.
It's such a moment of respect between the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like how concrete that is. And I think that would have to help Cut see that, okay, well, Rex is not this programmed automaton.
Yeah. And look, and it's not like this fight to defend the farm happens and Rex is like, see, Cut, you should join the war. Cut's like, you're right. No, it's like they again, the confirmation of they're on the right path for themselves is in that too. And that's why, again, this very purposeful episode.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think for me, some of the big picture ideas, I like that that Rex has this political perspective, right? Mm-hmm. This argument that he makes that he is in this pivotal moment in the history of the Republic and, they would be forced to live under an evil I can't well imagine. And that's bittersweet because that the war is a manipulation and people are going to have to live under an evil. But I also just feel like what I'm getting out of rewatching this, the Clone Wars this way, is remembering what Rex has seen and experienced of the separatist army itself and its leadership. We've talked before of like, there's the Mina Bonteri and there's the Cassian Andor's family and people who had legitimate political complaints with the Republic. And if Sidious stayed out of it, they probably could have worked them out with Padme and Bail in a functioning government.
But
those people are all get manipulated by the Sith and Grievous too. And that's what Rex deals with on a day-to-day basis. He doesn't deal with the people from this planet who have a legitimate grief. He sees the Separatist army and they are bad. Like in this episode, we see Grievous's cruelty and his cowardice. We see these mindless commando droids attacking children at a farm. Just the previous episode, Grievous made it extremely clear that his goal in life is to just torture and kill Jedi because he doesn't like him. We've seen, Separatists recently making plans to profit off of the war. We've seen them, blowing up trying to blow up medical stations and, just blow up ships with injured people escaping. So I think it's important to remember that even though poor Rex is being hoodwinked along with the entire galaxy, that his perspective of the Separatist army is really, really valid.
He's on the streets. He's seeing this and there's bigger discussions. And I think he's got to allow for those bigger discussions and continue to ask why he is here and why he's there. But to your point, you're absolutely right. What is there for him. And, It's very real and it's honorable in its own way. So that, again, another win for this episode. Just kind of it's 360 degrees around this conversation.
Yeah. And I don't need to belabor this because I think it comes up a lot in these Clone Wars episodes. But I again just see that theme of organic versus mechanical really being brought to the surface with how beautiful and flowing and organic Sulukumai is compared to all this literal machinery of war stomping across it, and the Rex and Cut debates about names. You know, are the clones just this rigid all the same, or do they have individuality? I think that was great to see that reflected again.
Absolutely. Look, it's been a theme since 1977. It's gonna be there.
Yep. And also farms and small communities. Farms. They pop up a lot. You could put together a whole, the Disney Plus could have the farm episodes of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the big ideas before we take a quick break?
No, man, there's even more to come, but this has been a great discussion so far. Happy to dig in.
Excellent. And we'll be digging into the action, the whimsy, the canon connections, all that great stuff in just a moment after this break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey,
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of the Clone Wars episode, The Deserter. Let's talk action. Ken, did you have any favorite action moments in this episode?
Yes, just the overall thing, we'll talk about cuts to fence. Like, this is video game badassery here.
Absolutely.
And he's definitely got help. Let's not deny that. But good sequence there. There's some really haunting about the activation of the commando droids with the kids. And a little moment. I wonder if this is on your list. With that clone shooting that rocket out of the sky.
Oh, yeah. No, you know what? I didn't. But that was so great. That it was really great to cut back to, like, how long have these clones been at it that they can accurately shoot a rocket out of the sky?
Yeah, I love that one there. So all those moments.
Yeah, it's great stuff. This is barely an action moment, but it felt really active when Grievous yells battle positions. And then we transition to the Djarik at Cut's place. it's hologram action, real action on Grievous's part. But that was a great moment. This episode does just have such an interesting relationship to action because it there's a couple of great action scenes, but it's not really about the action. But the commando droid looked like they have they're not fully powered, so they got a little bit of a zombie vibe.
Yeah.
I absolutely thought of video game. I feel like I've played this specific scene in Resident Evil like 1,000 times.
Yeah.
In particular, where you've got a defense and there's all these different places of vulnerability. And it's super creepy, but almost that level of culturally, we've played this scene so much, you almost want to be yelling at Cut, like, the window cut, not watch over the window, the cellar door cut, watch for the, you like, I love that they pop through every point of vulnerability.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And I think my favorite just little moment, I loved it that it's a great mix of action and horror, the popping through the window and up from the cellar, all really great. But there's that moment where Cut punches one of the commando droids and its eye briefly flashes red. Oh man,
I'm always like, don't punch metal, don't kick metal. Kenobi, you know better.
Yeah. All these years and still he's got to go for it. But that was just a great little action detail that just made it spicy, I thought.
Love that.
Anything else for you? There wasn't as much action in this episode.
No, just cool little fighting things. I do like, there's one point where there's one of the walkers that's destroyed, and I don't want to celebrate the destruction of clones, but it just had that kind of like cool explosion vibe.
Yeah, there's a cool shot of Kenobi landing and tensing and lighting the lightsaber. Yeah. Great stuff. But in general, it was just mainly the desire to hit the buttons for Cut and help him defend the homestead in that video game scene.
So
let's move on then to moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. What did you appreciate here?
I'll start with this. We already kind of talked about what it means for the episode, but the droids kind of losing power, that whole sequence. I'm trying to remember. I didn't write down my Star Wars thoughts in 2010. Still a big fan, always been a big fan, but I just think I would have hated this sequence in 2010 if I know myself back then. I'd have been like, yes, battle droids are moaning and it's not, we talked about the great purpose, but I don't know why. I am just my love. Now I'm going to just say love for the battle droids is just multiplying each episode. I just feel bad for them. And it's like, why are the droids moaning though? Like, do they have that programmed in them to moan in pain and agony? It's upsetting to me. And Grievous has this great line, "Not this again." Like, oh, how many times does this happen? And then one of the droids mumbles, "Yikes, like somebody has a case of the Mondays." And it's just, it's all great. And I just love this.
Yeah, the power low, shutting down. I can't go on. Like, just mind-bogglingly relatable. I can't go on. Yeah, I love the story of the battle droids. I love their personality. I love how much of it is in the Clone Wars, you know, playing Battlefront 2 and just getting to be a battle droid and their weird little personality of good luck turret when you leave a turret down as an officer and run away from it. I like the story that they are a connection to the clones. They are a mirror of the clones. They are mass produced to overwhelm. They're not meant to be that unstoppable or formidable themselves. In that way, they have a relationship to the stormtroopers of the Empire eventually too. They're just meant to overwhelm, and no care or attention has really been paid to, you know, giving them, I think, higher end programming. So they have these kind of weird personalities where they feel like they have that they know their basic jobs for the most part. Sometimes they don't. But this like weird comedy is coming out of this sort of like, we have not been prepared for our actual job fully.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you know, taking the Palpatine of it all out of the picture of just, you know, the Sith and what he wanted to do. But dare I say, it's hubris on the Separatists or the Trade Federation specifically in the beginning to be like, oh, we don't need it. We just need these lifeless robots that are going to go swarm and kill. We don't need anything else. It's just like, is that your strategy? It's not working.
I mean, I honestly feel like there is a little bit of it from George Lucas of real world, like, what if there was a war between giant tech companies, right? And
right.
And Apple made the fanciest high-end robots. And then, like, some other large company, GE, just made, like, we're going to have 10 million more droids than Apple, but they're all just going to be crap.
Yeah.
They're all just going to be, like, you know, Lucas is somebody who lived through the version of capitalism where we'll build loyalty by making really, really good ovens that never fail to we're going to make an oven that breaks every 3 years. So you have to buy a new oven, you know,
need that oven. Yeah.
And I think that there's a little bit of that sort of critique in the battle droids. And I, you know, find that in this sort of like it, you almost get like, it almost feels like Grievous is yelling at his, you know, Apple Watch. Like, it's not the Apple Watch's fault. It's out of juice. Like, charge it if you want it to work, you know?
It's the iSoldier versus the Microsoft version. And I use Microsoft products too, folks. I love the battle droids are the shoddy ovens of the Star Wars. I'll never not think that again.
Yeah. So great stuff, sad stuff, funny stuff there for me. A little moment with the kids. I like that this episode didn't lean into the kids being overly like cute or wacky, but there were some good fun moments. I liked it when I believe Jack said to his sister, "I didn't do it. You did." Blaming his sister for activating the commando droids. In bringing death upon their farm. It was just like, it was such a like, you know, normally like, ooh, we broke a vase, you know, I didn't do it, you did. And like, what, kids, you're about to die. Is this what you want to squabble about?
Yeah, don't press the button. Some great stuff with the kids and Sue, their mom. You know, we always love and highlighting moms in Star Wars. She's a fierce, but also loving, you know, parental figure for them. And has taught them well, and I love a lot of things there. But when they're at that dinner table there, I wrote down there's Rex says something. There's the adults are saying something, and then you cut to the kids, and they just look at Rex and like Jack's kind of like stops eating, and it's classic like sitcom comedy. It's really fun. It's a great beat.
Yeah. The other kids beat that I really like is that they just perceive the commando droids as monsters. There's something.
Yeah.
That they have been away from this kind of tech or maybe hidden from it that they perceive that they absolutely interpret it as it has to be something organic or mythic. Right. So they say monsters, they're chasing us. They hatched from the big egg. It's the really great point of the kind of organic versus rigid. And like, you know, I'm sure their dad is like, actually, well, kids, that's a Let's sit down and have a talk about where murder robots really come from.
The great stork brings them. There was one note too in the battle back with Kenobi and the clones and the droids. The strategy droid at one point says, "Take the shot," which I just, that's such a just classic cliche tropey line, but it's here in Star Wars, and that was fun.
Yeah. Last one for me, a moment of comedy and whimsy, goes back to our battle droids maybe being shoddy ovens who are not at all prepared for us. You've got the high stakes of Grievous is trying to get on that rescue ship, and Kenobi's trying to shoot it down, trying to stop Grievous, trying to make sure that all this carnage wasn't for nothing. And then we cut to the droid who's piloting that rescue ship says, "Hey, they're shooting at us." Like, why are you surprised? Why are you surprised by that droid?
Oh, the adventures of shoddy ovens.
That one really made me like legitimately laugh out loud of just the shock of it, you know?
Love it. Droid comedy. I'm telling you, you know what? I'm looking back. I've always loved the designs. There's some great shots in Phantom Menace, even back in the day. I was like, that's just good stuff. I don't know. I think it was the Roger of it all. I really do. I was a little shocked the first time I heard that. And I think you over time, you grow into it. It becomes, I even joked in the past, how on the radio at my old job, we'd say it. And so it's weird. So that's why I love revisiting these episodes. I think I just kind of fought against my initial reaction to Roger and all that kind of stuff from Phantom Menace. And it's I just see it so differently now.
Yeah, I think it's that old expectation game that we've talked about a lot of the generation that grew up with the original trilogy thinking, ooh, they're the new stormtroopers. They're right. The deadly threat. Like, are they silly?
Yeah.
Is the deadly threat silly? And the Clone Wars does, you know, has its cake and eats it too. Like, there's some shots of them that's terrifying when it's a big wall of them. And, you know, they do deliver death. And they also deliver some good comedy lines.
They kill. That's true.
All right. We'll move on from the comedy of the clankers. Let's talk. Do you have any other moments of comedy or whimsy?
No.
Or?
Oh, no. No, you're good.
Okay. Excellent. So we will move on to connections to other canon or lore in Star Wars. I got a few things, not as much as some episodes, but do you have anything you wanted to discuss under this category?
Yeah, the Dajarik one is great. And yeah, you mentioned the featurette. And it's always a fun bobbing for apples. You never know what you're going to get when you your head in the jar of the featurettes there, the barrel of the featurettes, because it was just Filoni talking about Dajarik. But what I loved about that and the connection to that is, this, again, going back to these episodes airing in 2010, was really the first time we saw Dajarik again. Like, it was the first, like, hey, remember that thing? Remember the holo chest from Star Wars? Like, this is a spot for it. And yes, maybe it was in other books and everything, but it's in the general Star Wars public. Now, because of Force Awakens, and we're seeing it, and I love when it pops up again. I just was watching Rise of Skywalker. I love that little open intro with Finn, Poe, and Chewie playing it. This was kind of the first time. So there's a big connection and big meaning to seeing it.
Right. I mean, that's really good to remember that perspective of our actual timeline in the real world. Because, now we've seen it in Force Awakens, Rise of Skywalker, Solo, right?
Yeah.
But this was the first time they're revisiting it. And that little featurette talking about how much that Filoni and the rest of the team wanted to make it look like stop action and get it right, you know?
Oh, yeah. George being upset.
Make them smooth now. Yeah, they can move smooth now, so make them. Yeah, that was a really great little insight.
Yeah, and Filoni say no, because this is how it is, and George being upset that he was working with fans. It's just paraphrasing, but it just great.
Yeah, coming at it from a fan perspective, yeah. A couple things for me, just like to note what planets look like in an attempt to sometimes remember them, because we meet so many in the Clone Wars, and you know, this whole prequel era really starts to get away from that original trilogy of like the major kinds of environment or weather, they're all a planet. So you know, we've done snow, we've done desert, we've done forest, so then this era starts to get a little bit more exotic, I would say. So I had forgot that Salukami appears to just be an entire planet that is basically Descanso Gardens here in the Los Angeles area. It's a collection of trees.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just like a ton of, right. There's some exotic, space trees, but there's like some straight up palm trees, a lot of them. And I had forgot that. I was thinking that Scarif was the first time on screen we'd seen palm trees, but no, Salukami is like, look, we got palm trees. We got trees of all kinds. We're a tree planet.
I want to go to a tree planet.
I like don't want to go to the street planet. It's, yeah, so I just thought it was cool and beautiful and interesting to note as we go through what are the actual planets. There's some other animals from other places who have made their way to Seleucumae. Who knows where the EOP started out, but we have some quality EOP time in this one. Grievous is riding a reek. Grievous on a reek. That was a fun thing to Google to confirm that I'd seen a reek.
Yeah, yeah.
And also it is just fun to see some of these animals that are from the prequel films in other contexts in the prequel era. Last thing for me is just tracking some of the clones that we spend some quality time with in this episode. We have Kix, Jesse, and Hardcase. And as we go through watching, trying to do a better job of following them, Kix is the medic, we spend some more time with him at the Battle of Umbara, that great Pong Krell arc that we'll get to eventually, Battle of Ringo Vinda, where some clone stuff goes wrong, and then a lot in that final season, Battle of Anexus with the Bad Batch, and Kix, interestingly, his fate is discussed in that Crimson Corsair short story that came out after The Force Awakens.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah. So he's got a little bit of a different path than some of the other clones, because he goes, I kind of don't want to spoil it because there was some really fun stuff, and I got to track down that actual short story eventually. Mm-hmm. And then Jesse is memorable because he's the one that has the huge Republic insignia tattoo all over his face. The guy who's all in. And that was fun to see him again, because I recognized him when we were watching season 7, but, you know, didn't connect back to what episodes is he in. And he pops up a lot of same places as Kix, not surprisingly, since they're, you know, all part of the same group. But he's in the Battle of Umbara, Ringo Vinda, Anexus. And then he is right there at the very end, the Siege of Mandalore in Order 66 with Rex and Ahsoka.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, that's memorable for so many reasons, but yeah.
Yeah.
Give me the face tattoo is also one as well.
That really helps to differentiate. I think nobody ever forgets who Jesse is. And then Hardcase, sadly, spoilers, falls victim to the brutalness of that Battle of Umbara arc. But it's always fun to, almost every time the clone names pop up, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, okay, so yeah, I remember them. And other times I'm like, oh, are we only learning their names so it will hurt more when they die?
Yep.
Anything else in canon lore connections?
You mentioned some of the animals, but Nuna's also there too as well. Love all that kind of stuff. And again, we talk about off, but just again, 5 years, here we are 5 years after the prequels and all the conversation around it. And then suddenly you see a reek and you're like, reek. I kind of like the reek. And it starts to work. This is what the series really did. When you hear people say in a very general sense, like, Clone Wars kind of made the prequels better. It just expanded it, but it also, and these episodes dive into the themes and all those things. But when you see stuff like that and the new becomes familiar and the new becomes something that you go, hey, I know that thing. And Leo DiCaprio gif, like it's powerful to me. And so it's no small thing to see a reek or any of these characters, the EOPs, all that kind of stuff.
The new becomes familiar is such a great way to say it. You know, I think there are other fandoms like this, but I think Star Wars really leans into it that, you know, we love the stories. We love just watching them as entertainment. But we always like making them a part of our lives. You know, they jump off of the screen and they kind of become our own in a certain way. And by the repetition of seeing these things, they start to really feel more comfortable and more like, you know, they're a part of our fandom.
Yeah, it's just a thing. Like I make this joke often, but it's not a joke. Like being such a 90s music guy and everything and just a pop culture person, like I still see Foo Fighters as a new band sometimes. They're in the Hot Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the reason is just because like they popped up that first album. It's like the drummer from Nirvana's got a new band and you just kind of forget that time moves on. And you're over there like, that new band's going pretty good for old Dave Grohl. For the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, apparently. And my old drama teacher was like, he goes, I still see Blondie as a new band. Talking Heads are one of the best new ones. And this was in the mid-90s, you know, like, and I remember him telling me that in high school. And then I'm like, that's kind of weird. And then now here I am like that. And that's the new becomes familiar. And you just kind of look back and go, that brand new Star Wars is 20 years old. And it's part of the conversation, part of the story. And it's part of our landscape as Star Wars fans. And
yeah,
episodes help do that.
It is, yeah, it is one of the amazing things about getting older and just remembering how differently we all perceive time, mm-hmm. right? Because for us, yeah, Force Awakens, it's, you know, starting to get a little bit older. And they're like, you know, people who were freshmen are in college now, right? People who were freshmen when Force Awakens came out are in college now.
Yeah.
And they probably think of Force Awakens as that really old movie, right?
You know, people are like, I love listening to Force Center. Oh, that's great. When did you start listening to? Well, I was in junior high.
And now I have 7 children.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, go for it.
The final thing you talked about, DeShark, I forgot to mention this. I love Small Note. And it's not sort of it's connected to larger things or lore. I love that Rex is good at playing DeShark, a game of strategy. A game of combat, but strategy, and how that's pointed out that he's good at it.
Yes, because it can be. I think this episode also has a little bit of like, let's get Rex out of Anakin mm-hmm. And Ahsoka's shadow up to a point. You know, even with that line early on where Cody and Obi-Wan comment on how great he is. You know,
yeah,
he is skilled himself. Great point. Yeah. Don't play Rex at DeJarek unless you want to get beat.
Right.
Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
I am no parrot, like my buddy Josh McCoug and his wonderful wife Amanda McCougar now, 2 weeks in on that.
I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Joseph, you're not a parent too.
I'm not.
So we maybe aren't the experts. I just want to state that, okay? But if there are droids on the planet and you know it, because Cut says that at the beginning of the conversations with Rex. If you're here, droids aren't far behind. I'm not quoting it, but just that's the idea. Why would you let your kids play outside? Why? Why?
I think he tells them to keep close, right?
Sure, but that egg's pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have checked that out a little bit better. Okay, so you are you're criticizing Cut's parenting.
Cut, Sue, I'm not criticizing her. It's not for me. I was raised by a mother that said you could ride your bike for about 30 yards in front of our house and you got to be home in 10 minutes or I'm calling the police department. Right. Like I know I have an overprotective childhood and, I get it, but there's a possible invasion of droids. Just, I don't know, go into the fields and come back when you're ready.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is like an energy of we're not going to live in fear. Mm-hmm. But you're right. That is undermined a little bit by him going like, you're bringing the droids to my house, aren't you? You know?
Yeah. Like I'm not. This isn't a angry car plot point destroyed video. But in the 3 times I watched this episode this week, I was like, come on. Don't let them play.
All right. Here's my big thing. And it is related to the children as well. Mm-hmm. Are they actually Cut's children? Do you think they're adopted? Or do you think because he's a clone, they aged really, really fast?
Well, here's what's interesting. So the answers are that they're adopted, right? That's the answer, at least when you dig in, right, to what's described. But the episode does not and not that they need to say that, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, but it's like, especially in 2010, I've always lived with the idea that those are his kids, and perhaps to your point, but apparently officially not the answer. Maybe that answer came later on. I don't know, but I even kind of looked it up after this episode as you're kind of, what are the names of the kids and this and that, and it's like, oh, okay, that's what it is, but because this episode leaves the impression that they are biologically his.
Okay. Yes. So did you find it on like their Wikipedia pages?
Yeah. If you dig okay. in, I think there's some, I think Pablo Hidalgo says that they're adoptive, they're adopted. They're from Sue's previous relationship or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I only had a little bit of time this morning. So I looked on the Wikipedia page for this episode and I watched the featurette expecting it to be like, yeah, no, they're adopted. Right. I thought that's what the featurette might be about. So I'm glad you found the actual information.
Yeah.
So I can put that question to rest.
Yeah. But again, I mean, again, you watch it and I had to confirm because it's like, you know, and look, this is a family unit. But yeah. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I kind of liked, I like that confirmation, and I like that that story, because Star Wars does have such a great history of absolutely honoring that family is not just biological, it is not just blood, yep. And this is another great episode then that really, really highlights that.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Yeah, and the kids are great, like, you look like my daddy. Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
A couple little moments, almost ties into the Rex being good at Djarik. I like that Commander Cody says Rex is a smart man, kind of talking to Kenobi like, I like that up-and-coming Rex. You know, I'm Commander Cody. Captain Rex is a little rank below me here, but I like that kid. I like that kid. That was a good moment.
Yeah, and Kenobi's response is what he always thinks. He always thinks on his feet.
Yes, thinking
on his feet, which almost seems like both a compliment to Rex and Anakin.
Similar. Yeah, and then there's a moment where Kenobi almost gets Grievous, so he wins the Coleman Treb Award for this episode. Almost really changed the course of the war.
So close, but not close enough. Yeah, feel poor Obi-Wan's pain. I think for me, the other thing that I wanted to touch on is just sometimes we don't make room for just absolutely gorgeous shots, and I like to talk about them here. You know, the end beat of Clone Wars episodes are fascinating to me because especially early on, I think there was that choice to be like, well, we want this to feel cinematic. So sometimes we kind of line, especially in the first season, we line up the main characters. So it kind of looks a little like, you know, A New Hope or Phantom Menace, and they're all lined up. And, you know, every once in a while, it's, I think the ending is a little off, like that one with that we talked about with Ahsoka just kind of staring out at the fleet. Didn't have that punch. This is so far to me one of the best final shots. It's just absolutely gorgeous and beautiful, and, you know, definitely a poster worthy, but it's also just this perfect summation of the episode, right? It's Rex with his helmet off, but his helmet is behind him kind of looking back at us, so it is sort of celebrating his identity as a clone, but also the helmet's off reminding us of his humanity. He is riding into the sunset, so it has this great sort of like sense of resolution and destiny. But he's also riding back to what he has explicitly just stated is his family. He's going back to the war, back to the Jedi, the clones, his brothers, the Republic, and all of the real children within it that he has made the choice to defend. And he's just riding into the sunset back to his family. Such a beautiful shot and summation of the episode of like why we told this story and what matters.
And then, you know, the MASH theme music starts playing. Wonderful shot. All jokes aside, I'm glad you pointed that out. I think so. If someone just suggested to us, maybe on Discord or Twitter, just like we should have the shot of the episode be, you know, a good poster worthy moment. And that is absolutely one. I'd hang that on my wall.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe we can keep an eye out for poster moments in the anything we haven't talked about section.
Yeah, well, I always want to give credit to people when we reach out, but it was my accidental apple juice moment when I needed to refill my apple juice watching the other episode with Barriss and Ahsoka and got a great freeze frame accidentally.
That's right. Yes, you were talking about your apple juice moment.
Yeah, so there it is. It's the Force Center Clone Wars apple juice moment.
We need a poster of Ken getting his apple juice. speaking of things that we celebrate every episode, we talk about any action figures we would like from this episode. Who do you want from this episode?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of great choices. The whole family could be celebrated in plastic, but I want Jack the son. I want Jack with crayon art piece.
Nice. I think the whole the farmstead, the homestead set would be great, but I think I really need a Cut Laquain Djarik challenge.
Yeah,
it's that great great Chewie action figure, which I have, which I love, which Filoni pointed out in the featurette of the Chewie. It's that comes with the Djarik set, and you can put his arms are behind his back.
Yeah,
so I would love that with Cut Laquain. Cut Laquain.
Yeah.
Trying to win Djarik.
I think this is a big giant farm playset we're creating here. So there you go.
Exactly. And you know what? I'll throw this one. This was in the playset as well. What I'm describing is the can't even battle droid that you hit a button on its back and it folds back into that fetal position of its creation.
Yeah.
So I love that there was one that doesn't fall over. It just, it folds back down like the way it is when it's in. It's so fetal position.
Oh, all my life's a circle. Sunrise and sundown. Yes. Is Ken singing Harry Chapin on Four Center? He is. He is.
So many emotions. All right. So next up is, we're finally here, Ken. Season 2, episode 11, Lightsaber Lost. One of my favorite. The big spotlight for Tara Sanube, one of my favorite Jedi. I'm so excited to discuss this episode.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to discuss. And I'm excited, too. I love it, too.
I'm excited to hear your thoughts and hear your reevaluation of Tara Sanube.
Yeah, but look, we've been broadcasting for so many years now, so many episodes. We all have the things we love. So, you know, when it's time for me to talk about a Y-Wing on a great bombing run, you know I'm going to be excited. And I know you're going to be excited and very, you just have some wonderful takes on Tara Sanube.
Yeah, can't wait to discuss. But for now, Ken, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
Sometimes I write these down. Sometimes I want to feel how our conversation goes. So I'm feeling the vibe here. Even though you feel like you're trudging along with no choice of your path, moaning as you go, you still have the ability to confirm for yourself that you're on the right podcast path. It's because I am moaning and groaning today.
I understand. I am moaning as I go. I can't go on some days, but then I'm rejuvenated from doing the podcast, which is great. Do you want to tell people where they can find us?
Absolutely. If you're listening and have been for nearly 1,000 total broadcasts, you probably know, but we always love seeing new names popping up, and we appreciate you here. Here's where you can find us. Force Center Podcast is on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram, YouTube as well. We always put some rebroadcast episodes up there. We are on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get merchandise at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We appreciate your support. You actually make our dreams and goals and our path. You make us moan less on our path. things like cool theme music, exclusive trading cards, all those things are all made possible by your support on Patreon. And for our own stuff, you can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com, link to things that I've done, wrote, or I'm on now, like the Good People Association. You can go to the gpa.fun as well to join over there. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for links to comedy albums, future shows, my other podcast, Obsessed. In particular, this week, my wife and I had a discussion about the Muppet Show. Ken and I, like Ken said, have been having fun just reminiscing off air about the Muppet Show. This episode of Obsessed with my wife, I lost control and just could not stop talking about the Muppet Show. It's been so great to reconnect, not just with the Muppets, but the particular magic of the Muppet Show now that's on Disney Plus. So if you're interested in that, you can find a link to Obsessed on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the honor of Cut Laquain and his entire family, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.